Today is Thursday, June 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Protests continue across the U.S. against systemic racism, and they are reverberating within American industries.
We have, for far too long, I think, engaged in business as usual.
Plus, the WHO sees signs of hope.
We show that together, through global solidarity, humanity can overcome this pandemic.
And China and India look to de-escalate tensions after a recent clash. We'll have those stories and more next. African-American George Floyd's death in police custody and the resulting widespread U.S. protests against police brutality and systemic racism have had reverberations throughout the media, entertainment, and the sports industries. VOA's Mariama Diallo has that story.
The top editor of Vogue, Anna Wintour, is under fire after allegations of racism at the fashion magazine. Wintour later apologized, saying she did not do enough to elevate black voices on her staff while publishing images and stories that have been racially and culturally hurtful or intolerant. Former Vogue editor-at-large Andre Leon Talley.
She is entitled, and I do not think she will ever let anything get in the way of her white privilege.
The criticism comes after Wintour, who has been at Vogue for over three decades, sent an email to employees, writing in part, "It can't be easy to be a black employee at Vogue, and there are too few of you. I know that it's not enough to say we will do better, but we will." Darnell Hunt is a dean at UCLA's College of Letters and Sciences.
We have, for far too long, I think, engaged in business as usual and have sort of told stories and circulated images in ways that don't, forward the agenda of people of color and other marginalized groups in this country. So I think the people taking to the streets coast to coast, not just people of color, but others who are just fed up and realize that we've hit this critical moment. Now it's time for people to either step up and do something meaningful or to step down.
And some are beginning to listen. U.S. magazine Harper's Bazaar will soon have its first black editor-in-chief in the magazine's 153-year history. And PepsiCo is retiring the 131-year-old Aunt Jemima Pancake Mix and Syrup brand, saying the company recognizes the character's origins are based on a racial stereotype. The U.S. company also announced a five-year, $400 million initiative to lift up black communities and increase black representation within its ranks.
I'm hoping that look in the mirror will be something that will actually cause people to reframe the way they're looking at society, the way they do business, and going forward, make sure that they're on the right side of history by actively working to include women and people of color in these important decisions.
In sports, National Football League Commissioner Roger Goodell, who last week apologized to players for not listening to their racism concerns sooner, committed $250 million to tackle the issue over the next 10 years.
We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
And in the U.S. television and film industry, the firing of four cast members from the reality show Vanderpump Rules, the announcement of the first black star of The Bachelor, and a diversity and inclusion pledge by the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences showcase a new awareness around race and a promise to do better. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Prosecutors in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia, have announced a felony murder charge against a white police officer who shot and killed Rayshard Brooks last Friday. In a dramatic news conference Wednesday, District Attorney Paul Howard revealed disturbing details caught on video that showed Officer Garrett Rolfe kick the wounded man after shooting him in the back. Howard said evidence also showed a second officer standing on Brooks as he lay dying. That officer also faces multiple charges. International Edition's Lori London spoke with criminal defense attorney Jack Rice about the charges against the police officer.
Well, it's a really big deal because we're starting to see a response that we probably wouldn't have seen before. Now, we have video in this case. That makes a difference here. But one of the issues we really have to look at is exactly what it is that this man did in response to the police and what the police did in response back. The problem that we have here is we have an autopsy that has two bullet holes from these police officers into the back of this man. Now, the question is, what was the threat? What's a reasonable use of force? And at this point, it appears that the prosecutor's office has decided that this was absolutely unreasonable and that essentially this was felony murder.
And do you think that what we're seeing with this new video of the police officer after he shot Mr. Brooks and Mr. Brooks was laying on the ground, that the officer apparently kicked him and the other officer apparently leaned on him? It's sort of unfathomable to understand.
Demeanor means something in a case like this. It wasn't just the fact that one of these officers kicked him. It's the fact that he didn't provide medical attention to him for more than 2 minutes, even though he knew that he was shot. If you look at the totality of circumstances, this is a big deal, and this really goes to the perceptions that this police officer seemed to have at the time, let alone the fact that he apparently had other complaints against him in the past. So this says a lot, but it also says a lot that they've decided to actually prosecute, because previously they didn't do anything to this officer. And so the fact that they're doing something now, I think, says something about the shift that may be coming generally down in Atlanta, but also in the country as a whole.
Right. And the other officer apparently saying he's willing to be a state's witness, meaning he's willing to testify against the officer that actually fired the shots. How big of a deal would that be?
It's a huge deal. He's actually been charged with assault as well. But if he turns state's witness, that can make a huge difference. It says something bigger, though. And then that one actually matters to me just as much, because this is not just about the bad acts of one officer. It's also about the obligation that other officers have to stand up. When they see something that's wrong, they must say something. That is a big part of the problem we're seeing nationwide, and certainly in this case in Atlanta.
Jack Rice is a criminal defense attorney, and he was speaking to International Edition's Lori London. U.S. lawmakers are rushing to address the demands for police reform heard in nationwide protests over the May 25th death of George Floyd. Senate Republicans announced on Wednesday that they will vote on a proposal next week, just as House Democrats are set to pass their own reform legislation. Republicans say their bill builds on President Donald Trump's Tuesday executive order, but Democrats say the Republicans' proposal does not sufficiently address no-knock warrants, which have resulted in the deaths of innocent people, or chokeholds, which have led to several deaths. Democrats' proposal also would end the legal doctrine of qualified immunity, which protects police officers accused of misconduct. The White House says qualified immunity is one of the many elements of the Democrats' proposal the president will never sign. With nearly 8.4 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 around the globe, according to a Johns Hopkins University tracker, the World Health Organization's director general sees signs of hope.
We show that together, through global solidarity, humanity can overcome this pandemic.
Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said on Wednesday during an online briefing that current advancements do not negate the need to stay vigilant.
While we are searching for COVID-19 treatments, we must continue strong efforts to prevent as many infections as possible by finding, isolating, testing, and caring for every case, and tracing and quarantining every contact.
Tedros was speaking about the drug dexamethasone, and the head of the WHO's emergencies program, Mike Ryan, issued these words of caution about the drug.
It's exceptionally important that this drug is used under medical supervision. This is not for mild cases. This is not for prophylaxis. This is a very, very powerful anti-inflammatory drug. It can rescue patients who are in very serious condition, where their lungs and their cardiovascular system around their lungs may be very inflamed. So this allows possibly that patients are able to continue getting oxygen into their blood from their lungs for a very critical period by rapidly reducing inflammation at a critical period in their illness. It is not a treatment for the virus itself. It is not a prevention for the virus. In fact, steroids, particularly powerful steroids, can be associated with viral replication. In other words, they can actually facilitate the division and replication of viruses in human bodies.
Ryan also noted that this is early information and more needs to be known before any conclusions can be reached.
It is one but of the many breakthroughs we're going to need in order to effectively deal with COVID-19. And as such, we should celebrate that today. But it's still just preliminary data. It's from one study. It's very significant, but we also have to see the real data, the full data.
New Zealand's COVID-19 border controls will be tightened after two women who had been allowed to leave mandatory quarantine early on compassionate grounds tested positive for the disease. It is a setback for the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who said on June 8th that there were no active cases of the new coronavirus in the country. Phil Mercer has more.
10 days ago, Jacinda Ardern said her South Pacific country of 5 million people had managed to crush the virus through some of the strictest lockdown measures in the world. Now, New Zealand's Prime Minister is apologising for a bungle involving two women who'd flown home from Britain to visit a dying parent. The New Zealanders were mistakenly released from mandatory quarantine without being tested for COVID-19. All returning citizens must go into state-managed isolation for 2 weeks and be tested twice for the new coronavirus, once on day 3 and again on day 12. The women later tested positive for the disease. Screening of more than 300 people who'd come into contact with the pair is continuing. They travelled from Britain via Doha, Qatar, and on to Brisbane, Australia, and then flew to New Zealand. Officials say it's unclear where they were infected. Ardern says it was an inexcusable error.
This case represents an unacceptable failure of the system. It should never have happened, and it cannot be repeated. From the beginning, we have taken an extraordinarily cautious approach at the border. That is why we have required every returning New Zealander to go into a facility that we manage. Our borders and the controls at our borders must be rigorous. They must be disciplined.
The New Zealand military has been put in charge of quarantine facilities. Early release of those in isolation on compassionate grounds has been suspended. Opposition politicians have alleged that the handling of the quarantine system seemed incredibly loose, with reports of people in isolation at hotels mingling in bars. There have been calls for New Zealand's Health Minister David Clark to be dismissed. The two cases bring to an end 24 days of no reported COVID-19 infections in New Zealand. The government has scrapped almost all of the disease control measures, although its international borders remain closed to foreign nationals. New Zealand has recorded just over 1,500 confirmed and probable COVID-19 infections. 22 people have died. Health officials are warning against complacency, insisting there was a pandemic raging outside our shores. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
German federal prosecutors say they had gathered enough evidence to suspect a Russian citizen of murdering a Georgian man, a former Chechen rebel, in Berlin last summer, and added the killing was ordered by Russian authorities. The suspect, only identified as Vadim K., is accused of murder and the illegal possession of a weapon. A spokesman for the German government said that they had expelled two members of the Russian embassy in December of 2019 in connection with the case, and added that Berlin has started taking new steps against Russia in connection with a hacking attack in the German parliament. Still to come on today's program.
Then all of a sudden, we have this unbelievably tragic situation, where for the first time in a number of decades, you had combat fatalities.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A number of animal species reproduce by laying eggs. This also included dinosaurs and extinct marine reptiles. Two recent studies provide fresh insight into ancient reptilian eggs. One study, led by the American Museum of Natural History and Yale University, proposes that the eggs of the very first dinosaurs were soft, with properties similar to most turtle eggs. Researchers in this study used a number of geochemical tools to analyze the fossilized eggs of two separate species of non-avian dinosaurs. The other study, led by researchers at the University of Texas at Austin, regards the 2011 discovery of the first fossilized egg found in Antarctica. Researchers determined the egg was also soft-shelled, measures a huge 28 by 18 centimeters, and that it may have been laid by an extinct giant marine reptile. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday dealt President Donald Trump a major setback on his hardline immigration policies, ruling against his bid to end a program that protects from deportation hundreds of thousands of immigrants, dubbed Dreamers, who entered the United States illegally as children. The justices, on a 5-4 vote, upheld lower court rulings that found that the Trump administration's 2017 move to rescind the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, created in 2012 by his Democratic predecessor, Barack Obama, was unlawful. Conservative Chief Justice John Roberts joined the court's four liberals in finding that the administration's actions were arbitrary and capricious under a federal law called the Administrative Procedure Act. The ruling means that the roughly 649,000 immigrants, mostly young Hispanic adults from Mexico and other Latin American countries, currently enrolled in DACA, will remain protected from deportation and eligible to obtain renewable two-year work permits. The ruling does not prevent Trump from trying again to end the program, but his administration is unlikely to be able to end DACA before the November 3rd election, in which Trump is seeking a second four-year term in office. In a book due to be released next week, former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton accuses President Trump of putting another term in office ahead of everything else. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has the details.
Bolton writes the president pleaded with China's Xi Jinping at a summit last year to help his chances for another term, telling Xi Democrats were hostile toward China and that more Chinese purchases from American farmers would help win a second Trump term. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says he was at the meeting with Xi.
Absolutely untrue. Never happened.
Bolton's accusation raises memories of the president's impeachment earlier this year for trying to get political help from Ukraine. Bolton says he's hard-pressed to think of any significant Trump decision during his 17 months in the West Wing that was not driven by re-election calculations. The White House has furiously been trying to delay the book's release, saying Bolton wrongly included highly classified information. The Justice Department asked a federal court yesterday for an emergency temporary restrainer, saying the book still has highly classified information. But that appears to be a tacit admission that many of Bolton's allegations are accurate. Inaccurate information cannot be classified. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A North Korean defector-led group stuffed hundreds of plastic bottles with rice Thursday, which they plan to float into North Korea despite a legal challenge from South Korean authorities and threats from Pyongyang. Angry over South Korea's failure to stop the defectors, North Korea this week blew up a joint liaison office on its side of the border, declared an end to dialogue with Seoul, and threatened military action. South Korea has been trying to improve relations with North Korea, and last week the government announced it would pursue legal actions against the two defector-led groups. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met China's top diplomat Yang Jiechi in Hawaii Wednesday in what Beijing described as a constructive dialogue amid a deep deterioration of ties between the world's two top economies. The countries have been at odds over the handling of the coronavirus pandemic and China's move to impose new security legislation on Hong Kong, among the latest flare-ups in years of escalating tensions. According to the State Department, Pompeo stressed the need for fully reciprocal dealings between the two nations across commercial, security, and diplomatic interactions. Beijing said the two sides agreed to continue engagement. The top decision-making body of China's parliament will review a draft of national security legislation for Hong Kong during a session in Beijing that began on Thursday, according to the official Xinhua news agency. The draft legislation defines four crimes: separatist activity, state subversion, terrorist activity, and collusion with foreign forces, according to Xinhua. The law is expected to bring about the most profound change to the former British colony's way of life since it returned to Chinese rule in 1997. It is expected to allow mainland security agents to be based in Hong Kong for the first time. China and India have agreed to de-escalate the situation at their border as soon as possible following a clash between their troops. In a phone call Wednesday, a senior Chinese diplomat told India's foreign minister that India should punish those responsible for the conflict and control its troops. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Michael Kugelman, South Asia expert at the Wilson Center in Washington, about the incident.
Well, you know, there's still a lot that's not known about what's been going on in Ladakh over the last few months. But I think what's quite clear, what we do know, is that the Chinese military has staged a number of incursions into territory that India believes to be its own. You've had several cases of Chinese soldiers basically setting up shop, pitching tents, setting up shop. Now, what's particularly troubling and surprising is that earlier this month, there had been a formal dialogue process started by the Indian and Chinese militaries that was meant to de-escalate the crisis that had emerged beginning in May and into early June. And so there, you know, the two sides were on a de-escalatory pattern. And yet then all of a sudden, we have this unbelievably tragic situation where for the first time in a number of decades, you had combat fatalities on the line of actual control, the disputed border. And we're talking about a significant number of fatalities, which appears to have been caused by some type of disagreement or dispute between Chinese and Indian soldiers that led to, you know, just really nasty, brutal, vicious fighting, punching, shoving.
Where do you see this going?
The messaging from the Indian side and from the Chinese side, there have been some statements released by the foreign ministries, have actually been surprisingly conciliatory. There have been plenty of conciliatory talk before this violent incident, but even now, it's continued to be conciliatory in the sense that both sides have emphasized that they're going to talk and they're going to meet. So my bottom line is I do think that things will wind down eventually, but it's just going to take a lot longer than we might have expected.
Michael Kugelman is a South Asia expert at the Wilson Center, and he was speaking to VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Iran test-fired what it called a new generation of cruise missiles Thursday, according to its navy, in the first such military exercises since 19 sailors were killed last month in a friendly fire incident. The navy said both short- and long-range missiles were tested. And some sad news, Dame Vera Lynn, the popular Forces sweetheart who serenaded British troops abroad during World War II, has died at the age of 103. During the war and long after, Lynn got crowd singing, smiling, and crying with sentimental favorites such as We Will Meet Again, as heard here on Decca Records.
But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Lynn hosted a popular BBC radio program during the war entitled Sincerely Yours, which she sent messages to British troops stationed abroad. In addition, Jean Kennedy Smith, the youngest sister and last surviving sibling of U.S. President John F. Kennedy, has died at the age of 92. Her daughter Kim told the New York Times that Smith died on Wednesday at her Manhattan home. Smith served as ambassador to Ireland for 5 years under the presidential administration of Bill Clinton, and she also founded an arts education program that supports artists with physical or mental disabilities. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other device to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.